The message I prepared for this morning, I'm going to preach tonight. If you're still here, don't ask me what that message is, because I don't want the devil to find out. And I'm going to tell him or anybody else until tonight. The message I preach, I've preached before, more than once, here. I never came to this church a preacher of sermons. I came trying to live principles in relationship with a person. And those principles are like the benchmarks in building. You go back to them as a point of reference when the need arises. I hope that God will enable His Word to develop a people that know how to lean on His Word in times of stress. I'm sure that professional mountain climbers, if they slip and fall, they do things almost instinctively that enables them to catch a grip that one less experienced in the path couldn't do. I'm sure professional swimmers can make the moves that are necessary to save themselves when other people would drown. And I think those that walk the path after the Lord ought to retreat from that tendency to always be hunting some new truth and really rivet in the principles that you can grab hold of quickly when you slip or stumble or when you're hit or when the elements arise. As I was sitting on the platform today, I decided that on this fifth anniversary, as we start the year, that if God honors our effort to grab His promises, and He will, it ought to be a year of unmerited favor, grace. That's what the number five stands for. So I reached in my mind for a principle. Most of you are discerning enough to know. The devil gave your pastor a pretty sound blow from unexpected sources. Cast down, but not destroyed. We made it through 1979, and I make it in times of stress because I've lived with this book and loved it so long. There are things that I just grab hold of, and whether they minister to me or not, at the moment I reach, I'll grab and hang on. I want this verse to be that for all of us today. I think I'm the only person that needs to grab hold of it, and I'm sure this church can always hang on to it, and you'll recognize it immediately. I've written a book on this passage. Genesis 13, 13. If you go back to the 12th chapter, you find a statement by God that looks back. So now the Lord had said. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, past tense, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. There are lots of elements in that verse that laid the challenge on Abram. It called for sacrifice, burning of the bridges, cutting the ties, separation from his father's house and all of his kindred. No certainty of what would come. Sacrifice 100%. Promise not quite so clear. An uncertainty that is only made certain by the promiser that he says, I will show thee. Leave what you know about. Leave your kindred. Leave your family. Burn the bridges. Follow me. And I'm going to show you where I want you to go. The reason that's in the past tense, now the Lord had said unto Abram, is because Abram didn't obey 100%. You read the 31st verse of the 11th chapter, it says, Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran. They went out of Ur and came unto Haran and dwelt there. Names always mean something in the Old Testament. As you know, Terah means turning. A certain instability in the person that was with Abram, his father in this case, meaning turning. Abram should have left Ur by himself. But he took Terah and Lot, the son of Haran, his nephew. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And the name Haran is very significant. It means halting. Here's the father of faith, the only man that God could trust to become the father of a people that God would use as his oracle. But he didn't start in a dead run. He just went part of the way. He took Terah along, turning, and they dwelt in Haran, halting. And the Word of God doesn't even waste any time telling what went on in Haran. They just treaded water there until Terah died. Now the reminder opens the 12th chapter. The Lord had said, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. I will bless them that bless thee, curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Abram finally got the message and departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him. But there's a key line in the fourth verse. We die to the flesh slowly, and Lot went with him. Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance they'd gathered, and all the souls they'd gotten in Haran. They went forth to go unto the land of Canaan. And unto the land of Canaan they came. Abram passed through the land unto the place of Shechem, unto the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. Now, if you've been in the Holy Land, he had crossed better territory than this place that he now stopped. Between what would later be called the Mount of Cursing and the Mount of Blessing, the town of Nablus sits there today in modern Israel. It's rocky. It's the high uplands of Samaria. The only thing you can say for it is you can see a long ways from the high points. Climb up one of the hills and you can see to the Jordan Rift, or all the way to the Sharon Plain on the west. Clear up to Mount Hebron in the north. and the hills climbing upward to Jerusalem to the south. When he was in that spot, didn't look like much, the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there, circle that word there builded he an altar unto the Lord, who appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. Why, I don't know, because God said this is the place. There was a famine in the land. I don't understand this, but I have to be convinced with the repetition in God's word. Every time that a victory occurs, and every time God's blessing is extended, and every time God reveals himself in a special way, expect a problem to follow. Either a testing by God, or an attack by Satan, or a combination of both as God enters into it and allows it to happen. I don't know if I'll ever get old enough in God, when I have a victory, to wake up quickly enough to know what's coming around the bend. It was after Mount Carmel that Elijah caved in. It was after the victory of David in sparing Saul that the next line says he falls into deep depression and for the first time defies the promises of God, utterly saying, I know Saul's going to kill me. After years of faithful following, he arrives at the place and the uncertainty's removed and God says, this is it. Bam. Famine comes. There was a famine in the land. And Abram didn't even pause long enough to ask God what to do. He went down to Egypt. And you know the story in Egypt. The great man of faith lied, failed God miserably, fell into sin. The 13th chapter, which is the text today, has Abram getting it back together again. He went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south, and Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver and in gold. Let me tell you something. I wrote it in my Bible and quoted it last night. The flesh in us, when the pressure's turned on, only wants one thing: escape and relief. I wrote something else down I didn't share last night. Do you know it's the easiest thing in the world to escape from trial? Let me know that. It is the easiest thing for any Christian to do, to escape from trial. Just run away from God. Just stop doing what God called you to do. And I'll tell you something else. Inevitably, the first circumstantial happenings that will occur when you run away from the place of trial is it'll get better for you. The devil will back off and leave you alone. The prince of the power of the air will let you pick a little fruit in his vineyard. And as you look at circumstances, you'll suddenly find black looks white and white looks black, and you'll say, see, I should have done this sooner. But wait a while. afterward comes. After the devil has set you up totally. Abram came out of Egypt very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. I've told people for years, you want to get the heat off of you, you want to have a good time, leave the Lord for a while. And anybody, now there are times that honest-hearted people stumble, break under pressure, slip. And the promise of God is that when my foot slipped, thy hand held me up. And the literal Hebrew is a hand reached out to shore up the path as you walk on it. But when a perverse, evil desire begins to take over, whatever it may be, and the warning signals of the Lord are rejected and you keep going, it's going to get easier for you. If you stumble and fall innocently, God will make it hard on you to get you back in the path. Because he's still dealing with his servant that for whatever reason has erred. But when perversion starts taking over, when you just want out, when you want out of the place of trial, then it's easy on you when you get out. And everything will get better for a while. You may get rich. And that's why lots of Christians sometimes say to people, you know, oh man, you leave God and you're going to suffer. My experience tells me most of them do pretty good the first few steps. Until the devil's got them in his clutches, then he becomes the hard taskmaster. Just write that down. If you want out of the place of trial, it's the easiest thing in the world for you to get out of it. All he had to do, it was downhill, notice. Says he went down to Egypt. All he had to do to avoid that famine that was going to test his faith was leave. But there's another line I penned in my Bible. If you want to get out of trial, it's the easiest thing in the world. Just leave. But remember this, when you leave the place of trial, you also leave the place of blessing. Don't ever forget that. When you leave the place of trial, you leave the place of blessing. The blessing was here where the famine came. And Abram went up out of Egypt, and he went on his journeys from the south, even unto Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. It's not difficult to get it back together with God. There are two ingredients. They're symbolized by those two words, the tent and the altar. The tent was the symbol, and it became the symbol all through Abram's life. It was the symbol of total availability and readiness to move at God's call. You know, a tent could be pitched and unpitched in a hurry. Thank God when it describes what Abram did at the first, there in the 12th chapter, it says he builded an altar and he pitched a tent. You know, there are a lot of people who pitch altars and build tents. You know what I'm saying? They pitch alders. That's a casual commitment. They build tents that can't be uprooted. Abram characterizes the life of faith. You pitch tents, the residence in this land. You build the altar, the place of sacrifice, the place of commitment, the place of recognition of God's claims on your life. And to get it back together, he had to go back to that point. Old Gene Scott knows. He knew it, but he knows it better today. Whether I'm 50, 70, or 120, I better keep pitching tents and building altars. God's demands are without compromise. We are His to command. The tent is an availability to be moved at His will. No arguments. And I just settling down and taking for granted these foundation stones in this tent I'm building. Snap. Pegs pull. We pitch tents and build altars under the place of the altar which you'd made there at the first. And there, back at the proper starting point, back at the place that God named, Abram called upon the name of the Lord. Here's that shadow still there. Fifth verse. And Lot also still hasn't cut it off. Lot also, part of the kindred he should have cut off when he left Ur. Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen, Abram's and Lot's. Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. And if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." You know, it's more painful right here than it would have been if you'd just left him in Ur. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan. That scoundrel hanging on to Abraham's coattails now is going to reveal his true motives. He beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord, destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah even. And I once preached a sermon in Australia on just these last few words of this 10th verse. The compromise that every renegade saint wants to find. The fanciful idea that Satan peddles to let a rebel saint feel like what he's doing is okay. The half and half compromise. He looked toward the place of Sodom and Gomorrah, which was before it was destroyed, and it was a well-watered plain. Look at the compromise. Even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. Cake and eat it too. Best of both. A compromising saint. Give me the place. There's got a little bit of Egypt and enough of the garden of the Lord that I've got everything in one pot. Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain. If I were preaching on Lot today and his stupid choice, and the whispered rationale of Satan that made him think he's getting a little of both, the garden of the Lord and the land of Egypt. You watch the progress. First he looks, then he chose, then he journeyed toward, then he dwelled in the city of the plain, then he pitched his tent toward Sodom, and if you keep going, he's sitting at the gate, and then he moved in. Sin never occurs in its fatality in one large leap.
This is the end of side one. For the rest of the message, please turn tape over to side two. Thank you.
Now Lot's gone. God's finally got. He put up with Abram, but he's now got Abram where he wanted him in the first place. Just him and the Lord. He's lost the best land in the natural. He's in a rocky, unpleasant place. He's surrounded by Canaanites, Perizzites, Hittites, Jebusites. He doesn't own a square inch. He's now lost the best land to his crooked nephew. And now God can work. And the Lord said unto Abram, God never wastes a word, after that Lot was separated from him. And everything before was introduction. Here's my text now. The Lord said unto Abram after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look, underline these words, from the place where thou art, northward, southward, eastward, westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Many, many times I've said, can we put flesh and blood on these Bible characters? Abram had a problem. You know, he just loved his flesh and his kindred too much. He isn't going to be cured overnight from the problem. He's going to squall and bawl to God later on. Say, spare Lot. When the angels appear, he's going to squall and bawl to God later on. Oh, that I might have Ishmael, another product of his sin later, before me. But Abram becomes the model of God's treatment of his saints. And if you want to go on in faith, we better learn from it. He was bleeding, of that I'm sure. His spoiled brat nephew had finally revealed himself. And after all Abram had done to him and for him, he picks the watered plain and leaves old Abram with the rocky hill and God. That's the difference. I don't know where you are today. I sure know where I'm at. It's a lot easier to fall down the shadow of one of those rocks on Bethel's hill and moan and groan and look at your toenails than it is to do what God says. But like a mountain climber that I used earlier, or a swimmer, I know what the principles are. Sympathy will kill us. I preached that for years out of Psalm 84. God's never interested in sympathizing with us. He's trying to deliver us from ourselves and set us free in Him and make us sons of God in eternity. There's only one thing to do, wherever you are. Underline one word, now. And on my fifth anniversary, I know what to do. As I preach many times, if you're sick and can't sit up, nod your head. Can't nod your head, blink your eyes. Can't blink your eyes and they're closed, roll your eyeballs. Faith fastens on to God's Word and makes it yours. And every promise in the book is mine. And on this first Sunday in November, 1979, this is my promise to claim, and it's yours. Now, circle that word. Now, not an hour from now, not a day from now, not a week from now. Of course, God will put up, I'm sure, to a point patiently. But if you want deliverance, and you want God's will, and you want God's help, now! Eight minutes to 12, California time. Now! Underline these other words. From the place where thou art. Well, it'd be a lot easier to do what he's going to say if he had changed things a little bit. There are people who will testify, and I've had it happen very rarely, but there is a tendency in Christianity always to think if we will just squall and pray and fast and cry and bawl and holler and yell and scream and moan and groan and cry and bellyache, eventually God will get so fed up, like a mama that picks up a squalling kid, he'll do it all, pick us up. I think God's more like my mom. When I had a squalling fit as a kid, she shoved my head under a faucet of ice water. She didn't like me to tell that story. And she bawls me out every time if I don't say. She was afraid I was going to choke to death because I was going blue holding my breath. But I can tell you this, it broke my tantrum. When that cold water hit the back of my neck, I expelled my breath in a hurry, she tells me at least. God isn't going to do it for you. As I've been preaching all week, we don't let go, let God. We take hold with God. And we take a grip on a promise, and we know what we're going to do. Don't be a mountain climber. You fell off of a crevice, say, oh, God, catch me. There ain't going to know. Angel do it, bad grandma or not, grab hold of something. God's Word. Now, from the place that thou art. Oh, come on, God. Turn the clock back, change the situation. Roll the time machine backward. And let me look before Lot got Jordan Plain. There's nothing left. It's worth saving. Now, from the place that thou art, wherever we are today, here in this building, preaching behind this pulpit, out there. Now, from the place that thou art, what? I'm going to pick you up. That isn't what it says. Lift up now thine eyes. From the place, well, and look. You know, I don't want to put on a ludicrous act, but I can see somebody lifting up and closing their eyes. They don't dare look. Can't bear to face the circumstance. Lift up now thine eyes from the place that thou art and look, stare in the face. If you're crying, look through the tears. Lift up now thine eyes from the place where thou art and look northward, southward, eastward, westward. I'm going to give it all to you. You're finally where I want you. You're back at the altar. You're back at the tent. I'm going to give it all to you. Oh, that's great, Lord. I got this for it. I got my head up, and I'm looking. Arise. He must have been sitting down, feeling sorry for himself. Arise. Okay, I'm up, Lord. What next? Walk through the land and the length of it and in the breadth of it. How many have been to the Holy Land? Hold your hand up high. How many know that's a whale of a lot of walking? That's a long ways. I drove from Dan to Beersheba one day in an old Mustang convertible I'd rented. Wore me out. Driving. Arise and walk. You mean I don't get a super spiritual deliverance? You mean that all this promise is not going to be coupled with 40,000 angels and the chariots of fire and the horsemen thereof and the zippity zoom up and down the land? No. Arise. Walk through the land. The breadth of it, the length of it, and wherever the sole of your foot touches, it's going to be yours and your children. Look down at the dust you've been groveling in. If you can count the grains, that's how many kids you're going to have. As I fulfill my promises in you. Now, I could stop preaching right here. I don't really have a lot of applications to it today. This is the fifth year. I know one thing. I know God sent me here. I know another thing. More than once, I've wanted to flee from the pressure. And a lot of the discerning people have known sometimes as I've preached, and preached to myself, the very forcefulness of the message was to grab hold of Gene Scott and make him stay another week. I know this third thing. I don't want to go today. I don't want to move out of the place of blessing. And I know that God has great things in store for these churches. Or he wouldn't put us through what he's put us through. I'd be less than honest if I didn't tell you in the flesh. I would wish your pastor hadn't bled so openly the last few weeks. Well, I'll tell you this today. I'm going to lift up mine eyes now from the place that I am and arise and walk. And I'm asking you, as we ask them to abode here, I'm asking you, the principles are unchanged. God didn't tell Abram anything he hadn't already promised him. There wasn't some new spiritual experience he had to come to. He just had to come back to the place of the tent and the altar and the place God said. Nothing's changed about this work. God sent us here to build up the walls of faith that God's purposes in this work might be accomplished through us. Well, my message for the fifth year is, wherever you are, lift up now thine eyes from the place that thou art and look. You say, well, God hasn't given me quite as many promises, about 1,000 times more, right here. All we've got to do is arise and start walking and make them ours. Will you say it with me? We made it through 1979. Let's try it again. We made it through 1979.